Everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, and today we have another very special episode with our Summer Game Fest Playdays coverage. This time, we got to talk to Grounded 2's game director, Chris Parker, about Grounded 2, how the game has evolved from the first one, how it's grown with its community, the fact that there are raid bosses in it now, and, of course, its new mount system. We pretty much cover everything in the new Beat the Heat update, so give it a listen.
I'm Chris Parker. I'm the game director for Obsidian on Grounded 2.
Awesome. So I guess my first question, you all have the new update with Beat the Heat, and you introduced King Dozer, big boss. I guess, what made you all decide to go with, you know, a kind of herp, you know, the horny toad of the zoo?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. It kind of has a long history, to be honest with you. So the Grounded 1 team had actually worked on trying to bring a lizard into the game as the only, like, sort of non-insect ever. And they got to a certain level of getting it done, and it just sort of didn't fit, and the gameplay wasn't really there, and so they just scrapped it for a time. And so when we started doing, and more importantly, the community, though, did actually find out about it, and they were like, one of the big things that the community asked for was, you know, bring the lizard back, like, actually do it, like, let's have it as a boss. And so when we started Grounded 2, we had lots of features and thoughts and things that we were talking about, but one of the early things that made it on the list was, like, we really got to revisit this lizard. We got to see if this is a thing that we can do. We maybe have some time to sort of, like, look at what worked and didn't work with Grounded 1 and figure it out. And so when we were doing the garden update, the way that everything worked story-wise, when we were plotting all that out, is we're like, this is the spot where the lizard actually makes the most sense. This is the place where we actually want to do it. And so, you know, Obsidian and IDOS just, like, started talking about it and just said, like, let's figure it out. And so that's where that King Dozer fight comes from and why the lizard got reintroduced there. And it wound up not being the first non-insect, because technically the snake got in there before, technically. But you don't fight the snake. The snake just kills you, or you get some scales from it. This is the first thing you can fight that's not an insect. And so, yeah, that's how it came together. Like I said, kind of a long story, but it was really all about, well, number one, we thought it would be cool, but two, the community thought it would be super cool, so we ran with it.
Yeah, and so obviously during my demo, we basically had some classes. Is that something that you probably feel that everybody should need to know to, like, go into the fight King Dozer, or just kind of build your own build and believe you should be able to beat?
So I think that there are definitely classes. There are definitely also some things that you should, you know, make to go into the fight with King Dozer, whether you have, like, some mint shards to eat, or whether you make some anti-sizzle smoothies. Those are things that are going to help you out. The goal for us is to make that boss accessible by, you know, all classes. But I mean, I think in reality, like, different insects, and this applies to this boss as well, different classes do better against different foes. And the reason why it's so easy to switch between different builds and Grounded is so that you can kind of do that every single player, right?
Yeah.
So I think for me personally, the two archetypes that sort of win that fight are Fighter and Mage. Mage, you're able to keep your distance and kind of keep blasting it with your staff. And Fighter, I think you have a lot of tanking abilities there that you can... by just the nature of having heavy armor and stuff like that, but I think help out. I think the other classes work too, but those are probably the two I like the most having played it. But, yeah, I mean, that's about it.
Yeah, so kind of with the thing, obviously you guys added mounts and, you know, or the thuggies and Grounded too. I guess kind of why do you all decide to go finally add, like, a progression system and want to, like, expand on more than just have players having a mount that can kind of do something for them very soon?
Yeah, there's a couple different reasons why the buggies as, like, a feature are kind of going the direction that they're going. So, and this comes from a couple of different proposals that were talked about between IDOS and us. So, on the one hand, it was proposed that, like, hey, maybe buggies are more like cars in GTA. And they're sort of like, you use them until they crash, but they're kind of disposable, and then you just go get another one, right? Which isn't exactly how cars work in GTA, but I think you get that. You get my point, right? And so, like, that was one thing. And then the other was like, well, but what if they're more like Pokemon, where, like, I'm going to have some Pokemon, I'm going to grow them up, some of them are going to be good for this kind of fight, some will be good for this kind of fight, and after a lot of discussion, where we ultimately landed was a little bit of both of those sort of ideas, but taken in a very grounded direction, which was, hey, we want buggies that are very capable at certain things, like the Red Ant is your generalist, but it's also really good at building, whereas the Orb Weaver is really all about fighting, the Lady Buggy is about being able to shoot and take down flying creatures and also clean up toxic things. And so the idea that they would all have sort of have their own special sauce that they bring to any sort of situation was important to us. But at the same time, we were like, well, if you have a Red Ant Buggy and then you're able to go get a Black Ant Buggy, what do you do with the Red Ant? I just put it in the closet and never use it again, right? So that's not that much fun. So that's where the buggy progression side of things come from. And then I think that, you know, most of Grounded's gameplay loops are about, you know, to go do a thing, whether that's harvest a thing or explore to find a thing or go kill a thing, get a resource, turn that into better stuff so that I can go do it again. I think applying that to buggies was something that just sounded cool and fun to us. And so, again, that's us just saying, like, I think there's a way to grow this gameplay loop and make it fun. And so that's where the progression comes from. There's a lot of discussion about how to do the progression. Like, do I just, like, mutate a Red Ant into a Black Ant? And then it's like, that's not as much fun. What if we level up and then you have both, you know, and then eventually we have other kinds of ants that are higher tier, and we can level all of them up. But you can already see, like, the Black Ant still has a sour ranged ability the Red Ant does not have. So even though they might be the same tier and similar power levels, they're still a little bit different. So it's just a fun way for us to play with stuff.
Yeah, and I guess kind of in the same vein of, like, any limitations of, like, do you all think about making sure, like, players can be able to progress all of their buggies, or, like, kind of, like, you only have to make sure you can, you know, select amount of options for, like, upgrades. Okay, you guys get 50 upgrades that you need to do between all of your buggies versus, like, you can do that.
So, as it stands, and obviously we haven't finished making it yet, we'll see how things work out. But the current thinking is that I should be able to level up all of my buggies within the same family to the same tier. And so, you know, what does that mean? Like, right now, I can level up a Black Ant buggy once to get it to tier 3, and I can level up the Red Ant twice to get it to tier 3. And so, does that mean I'll be able to level up ants beyond that? Like, we haven't gotten there yet. But if we were to say add a tier 4 for ants, then it would be Red Ants can go to tier 4, Black Ants can go to tier 4. Maybe they never go to tier 5. Maybe that's only other creatures that can do that. But but I think within families, we're always going to allow that. And let people... If people want to invest in their buggies and they want to have a whole bunch of ants that are all different tiers, you know what? Have a party. You know what? Like, we don't want to limit you on that. You know, do what you want.
That's something that you all seen a lot, where people are just like, we're just going to make, like, a farm out here. Just
great. Absolutely.
kind of, because obviously as the game grows and expands, y'all are adding more mutations, new everything. What is kind of some of the kind of issues and balancing that goes into where when you add something new and you keep expanding, that some of the older ones don't just become, like, kind of, like, meaningless, per se?
The unfortunate thing is that sometimes we do, honestly, paint ourselves into a little bit of a corner with systems when we introduce something new and then we're like, this thing over here doesn't work that great anymore. I mean, thankfully, IDOS has some amazing systems designers like Pat Cliff and a couple of others that are pretty good about thinking all of these things through beforehand. And I think at Obsidian, because you know our background is all in role-playing games, I think we have a pretty good feeling about how those things are going to work out. But inevitably, sometimes we have to make changes. A really small example of that is that in the 0.5 update, we're rebalancing brain power because it kind of became this like overly bloated system that needed to actually be pared down to preserve the survivalness of the game. And so, you know what? That's just the thing that we realized, hey, we got to change that. Like, let's go fix it. And then we just changed those things. And the nice thing about early access is we have some ability to actually tune that stuff and figure it out as we're going.
And kind of the same vein, like, you guys had, like, what has it been like you could, for, like, all, I guess, for the last few years, like, you had Grounded 1, lots and lots of upgrades, Grounded 2, more and more upgrades. So, like, what has it been like for you seeing this game go, you know, kind of the series go from, like, almost like a basic, you know, just 4-kid survival game where you just build a base, kind of go to bugs, and now, like, you know, you have, like, races, you're fighting for, you know, lizards and everything. Like, the massive growth of different. That was just a basic survival game with some kids in the yard.
Well, I mean, it's been cool. I think the reason, you know, why Grounded 2 has been able to be as sort of expansive as it is that Grounded 1 was a really, really strong foundation for us. Like, all of that stuff was kind of there, and for the most part, yeah, we needed to, like, sort of up-res some of it, some of those systems we needed to think about a little bit. But by and large, we were able to take sort of Grounded 1 and just start adding pieces into it. And so, yeah, in some cases, this has gotten, like, pretty crazy. Like, when I look at our armor list now, it's like there's so many armors, and I'm like, hey, we need to come out, you know, talking with IDOS. You guys, we need to figure out some other ways to, like, filter these lists, because they're getting so long, there's so much stuff in here, that, like, it's getting hard. Like, actually, the best example is the Resource Finder. Like, if you've played all the way through to the end of the garden, you go into the Resource Finder, and you have something that starts with, like, an S towards the end of the alphabet, you're like, oh, man, I'm going to have to scroll down for a while to find this thing. Okay, and that's where I'm like, yeah, we need to figure out how to, like, you know, do a different kind of filtering system here. But, yeah, to answer the question, it's just been something where we've been able to effectively, because of Grounded 1's success and because their foundation was so strong, just continue to build on it and evolve in a way that said, yeah, let us make a really big, expansible, and hopefully super fun experience.
And kind of the same thing with all these expansive things. What has been your, like, favorite thing that you all been able to do that you maybe thought that you would never even get that?
Wow, that's a good question. So, well, I mean, the interesting thing is that I have a pretty conservative view of what we're going to get done, right? Like, I like to sort of shoot for the stars, but also pull back on that. Like, it's kind of my job. And so, like, usually if it's not going to happen, I have a pretty good idea it's not going to happen. I guess what I would say is, and this is going to feel like a cop-out answer, but I'm going to put it out there anyways. The very first days on the project, we were like, hey, IDOS, we need to do buggies. They were called buggies back then. They were called mechs. We need to do them. We need to try and figure this out. We need to try and solve this problem. And if we can't solve it, okay, but we have to try. Like, let's try and figure this out. And honestly, like, I don't even know how they did this, but, like, 2 months later, they delivered us a prototype, the teen riding around on an ant, and it's leaning into it, and it's doing stuff, and the animations pretty much all work, and it felt kind of like you were riding a dirt bike, only you were on an ant. And I was like, holy crap, like, this is going to work. All right, you know, and from then on, it's like, okay, well, if that's going to work, how do we sort of lean into this? But I think that was the number one thing right off the bat. But also, I think the thing that I was initially most worried about, a lot of the other stuff that we've done is like, hey, brand one showed us how to do this. We can improve upon it. We can add to it. We can make it better. I think the buggies was the thing where I think it was most scary to pull off. And that I was so happy when we so early were able to pull it off.
I mean, I think they've been great. They're exciting. They're fun. I mean, the kind of thing was, how did terrain like play a factor in that? Like, because obviously, you know, you talked about dirt bikes and everything. You all have to do anything, redo any terrain for the park, or it's kind of all seemed to work since it was kind of their bugs.
Most of it worked. The thing that had to change a little bit was on the building side, particularly on the world building side. We come up with certain sort of specifications for, and you have to do these pretty early, like, hey, how far can the player jump? And how high can the player jump? And how is that going to affect different things that we build into the train or different props? You know, what is the steepest angle that I can actually run up? And can a buggy run up a steeper angle than the player can run up? Are we going to use that in some fashion, in some sort of gameplay sense, to actually make this better? And so I think making sure that we understood what those rules were early on was important. And IDOS, by the way, knew all those rules, so it's not like something we had to say, like, hey, guys, you should think about this. Like, they knew it, and we knew it, and so it was something that we set about doing early on. But for the most part, I don't think so. This isn't really a terrain thing, but it is sort of. Like, as soon as you can move faster in a game, you actually sort of need to space things out a little bit more. So our, like, main points of interest in Grounded 2 are a little bit farther away than they were in Grounded 1. And that's just because you want the player to only spend, like, you know, whatever, however long, 25 seconds getting to this next wonder. And then from that point of interest or wonder, we call it wonders, you maybe want to be able to see at least two or three other ones. So there's always a series of interesting things that are sort of leading you through the park. And one of the reasons the park is so much bigger than the yard in Grounded 1 is because we were going to have buggies, and buggies were going to run really fast. And so we had to figure out those buggy speeds pretty early on to sort of, like, incorporate that into just how we built things.
And I guess my final question would be, so obviously, still no access, but between Grounded 1, Grounded 2, all these updates, for somebody who's, like, never, like, played any of the Grounded, like, what would be any recommendations on, like, or tips, I guess, to get into Grounded, that I'm, like, afraid of, kind of worried about coming in here, there's so much content, so much to do, I might be lost, everything.
So, as you're aware, we're coming out on PlayStation 5 on August 11th with this Into the Abyss update. For PlayStation players, if they don't want to wait for that, or if maybe they're a little nervous about what they're going to get in Grounded 2, Grounded 1 is actually offered on PlayStation Plus as a free play for this month, for the entire month of June. So there's an easy way to sort of get into that. But what I'll say about Grounded as a whole is that I think when you talk about survival experiences, I think Grounded is actually pretty accessible. I think that I've talked to people who, and by the way, Grounded I don't think is a kid's game by any means, but have played it with their kids, and their kids can enjoy it as young as maybe even 8 years old or something like that. I think we have good accessibility options, so if you have arachnophobia, you can go into the arachnophobia mode and turn them into what we call danger dumplings, which are effectively not spiders anymore. They're more like friendly balloons. And I think that the basic gameplay loops in Grounded are, like, understandable and accessible from a very early portion of the game, particularly in Grounded 2. Because in Grounded 2, we wanted to do a better job onboarding players than we did in Grounded 1. And so when it comes to figuring out how to make food, figuring out how to drink, drink water, when it comes to making your first armor set or your first weapons. Like, I think all of these things, all of these sort of survival loops are introduced, like, both pretty organically and from a pretty sort of easy standpoint for the players. So I think that that onboarding for players into that survival loop is pretty great in Grounded 2. So I think what I would tell people is, don't be afraid of it because it's labeled a survival horror game. I think that you will love it. Try it out. Yes, there are survival elements, but once you've played it for a little while, you're going to forgive me.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, so for sure.